going to talk about some case studies, but I really want to start with what is new media or Web 2.0, and why does CDC care, and why should public health professionals really care? So when we talk about, we actually don't call it new media in our group at CDC, we call it interactive media, because some of the things that we're doing aren't necessarily really new, but they're still interactive and they're new for us. So when we talk about what falls into this category, we talk about things that have high degrees of participation, personalization, and presentation. And I'm going to show you some examples here. So participation. These are blogs, social networks. The idea now that we're moving away from just using the internet to get information to people actually wanting to participate. They want to write posts or they want to comment. They want to find other people and have a support group or make friends. And a lot of people, especially in the younger demographics, really are using social networks to find and make friends, not just connect with people that they already know. Personalization. The idea that with all of the information on the web, you can find something that is meaningful to you as an individual. So you can go to WebMD and you can use their symptom tracker. You can download this widget here, and I'll explain what that is as well. So the calorie counter here is a widget. It's just a little box of content, and people can put that on their blog, on their like if you have a Google homepage where you make a little page and you say, okay, I want the news for today and I want to know what the sale or the best books at Amazon are, and I want to be able to track my calories every day. And that gives me personalized health information. Another widget is for pregnancy here, and you can set that up and time it so that every day it will show you where you are in that stage and where your baby is. And so that's really meaningful information specifically for you. And then we're looking at some personal public service announcements, and I have an example of that later, so we'll go into that. And if anybody has any questions or wants me to explain something more, just raise your hand and jump in. And last, presentation. So there are lots of new ways that we can look at the information online. There are now videos and photo sharing sites. You can, in the upper right-hand corner, that is a widget on Revolution Health, which I think is fantastic. And the little red tab up at the top under 2006 is actually a sliding bar. You can move that back and forth, and the map changes colors over time, and you can see visually the changing obesity rates. There are now programs where you can get information over your cell phone, and we're looking a lot into mobile applications. This is a screenshot from an organization in San Francisco where it was promoted to high school kids so they could text into a number, sex info, and get back something that would say, press 1 if the condom broke, or press 2 if you think your boyfriend's cheating on you, and it would give you specific information for that situation, and then the location and hours you could go into a testing center in the area.
Something like that.
That was a big example. But really, why we should care is that the movement of Web 2.0 is really about empowerment. So it's no longer people just accessing information. People actually have the tools to become empowered and do something about it. So I want to use a fun example, step outside of health for a minute to really show you how this can play out. So last June, CBS canceled Jericho. Do we have any Jericho fans in the audience? Okay.
That's why they canceled it.
I can see from your face you were distraught. You were not alone. So there was a radio talk show host who was very upset, as you were, and they, I guess, referenced Peanuts in their last episode. And so he said, you know what, I'm upset about this, and I think we should show CBS how upset we are, and you know what, I'm going to send the president of CBS some Peanuts. And by the way, if you want to send Peanuts too, here's the address. Right? And the listeners heard it, and they got online, and they wrote it about it in blogs, and they talked about it to their friends and their social network, and guess what, in a couple weeks, I think it was somewhere between 3 and 4 weeks, they sent 9 tons of peanuts to the CBS president. And so, CBS president Nina Tasser said, okay, you win, I give up. We're gonna put it back on the air. And this is a quote from an interview that she did on CNN, and it says, it was the first time we were able to see an immediate and very engaged and very specific response to a show being canceled. Right? She's not saying this is the first time a show was ever canceled and fans were upset. She's saying this is the first time we were able to see that, that they could connect with one another and do something about it. And then what she did is she went on to a blog and a site where you could buy peanuts to send to her, and she said, okay, we listened, you won. But guess what? We are still a business, we still need ratings, and we still need to sell commercials, so if you really love this show, we need you to go out and recruit viewers. You are the biggest advocate, so you go tell your friends why you love it and get them to come and watch it for us. So basically do our marketing job for us. She was empowering them because they really made a big statement. And P.S., please stop sending us nuts. So, and we're seeing this in health too, right? People now have the tools to really get meaningful information, connect with other people, and then want to do something about it. This is a screenshot from a website, and the King's College in London put up this website probably about a year ago, and it measures air quality around the city. I don't know that they really had a big intention in doing this, but it sparked a huge debate. First, among the scientific community, you know, what should you measure in air quality to get an accurate reading? And that discussion happened during a year of politics, and so it spilled over into some of the political debates. But then also, everyday citizens could see this and wonder, wait a minute, I'm in that red dot right there, and I'm in the red, but six blocks over, my neighbor's in the green. Why is that? What is it about my house where I live with my children that's different than the one six blocks over? And by the way, who's going to do something about it? Another example is Daily Strength, which is a social network for sort of the average consumer. Their demographics are females in probably mid-30s to mid-40s, and you can join different support groups. So you make a profile and you join groups that are of interest to you. There are conditions you have or someone you love has or you're concerned about them. And when you join them, if it's something that you have, you can list what treatment you're taking. It's optional, but they give you the choice, and you could say, I have anxiety and I've been prescribed Paxil and I think it works 60% of the time. And then other people can look at the aggregate data and say, wait a minute, in this community, 3,000 people, you know, rated Paxil, and I hope there's no one from Paxil Hill, which is just an example. But, you know, 3,000 people rated some drug, and they said it's only effective 60% of the time. And people are printing this out, and they're taking it into their doctor's office, and they're saying, I want this prescription, not this prescription. Right? And it's not because a pharma commercial told them, with flowers and bicycles and butterflies, that this was really good. No, this is someone like me, someone who understands me, who's been through something like me, said that this is what's meaningful and this is what works. And this is how people are making their health decisions. And so we're seeing a shift from authoritative sources to more person-to-person everyday sources. And so I think this is the key about why public health professionals should care. And we have to learn how to become involved in this process and participate and to, where appropriate and where we can, give them the correct scientific information so that they have that when they're making the decisions. So, of course, the CDC mission is very broad, and at eHealth we also have a very broad mission, and we can't achieve it all, but our goal is to work with scientists across CDC and take their science, their research, and make it available when, where, and how users want it. So we can't do everything. We are starting small and working on pilots, but our goal is that if somebody wants to access the information online in Spanish in a large font, we should be able to provide that. If our research says that someone wants to get that information on their cell phone when they're in the grocery store making a decision, then we should be able to provide that too. And so that's what our goal is. And here are some of the areas that we're working in. So I'm not going to talk about all of these in the examples I'm going to show you, but I'll just go over them here to make sure that everyone is familiar. So we have email and text message alerts, and I'll talk a little bit about that. Podcasts, we have the cdc.gov podcast page, and then it also is uploaded on iTunes. But interestingly enough, we get about 3,000 downloads a day of podcasts, and people are watching them from the CDC site, not downloading them and taking them with them on their iPod, so that's starting to change the way that we create them. E-cards, mobile applications, I have a couple examples of those, social networks like MySpace and Facebook, user-generated content, so someone creating a video and uploading it on YouTube. Content syndication is a little bit more technical, and I have an example to show you what that is. Blogs, of course, and webinars, and we've had them for the blog writers, and I'll show you some of those. Wikis, I'm not going to talk specifically about wikis, but that's the idea, like Wikipedia, that multiple people can contribute and edit. Excuse me. Interactive games, both online games and video games, and using that as a channel for messaging. Viral videos like YouTube, virtual worlds, which I have an example of, tagging or bookmarking, so Dig and Delicious, sites where you can, it's like a consolidated list of your favorites and you can rate them and share them with the people that you know, so it's a good way. We use it in our team when we find great resources. Rather than sending it out in an email to everyone, we'll tag it and it'll be in our list so people can go and sort of look across our team and see what other people are looking at and think are useful. And then widgets, which I talked a little bit about briefly, but is there anyone that is still a little bit confused about widgets? Don't be shy, because they had to explain it to me several times when we first started doing this. Thank you.
I'm still confused.
Okay, so you can go to Google and you can personalize your homepage. So you can say, this is gonna be my homepage every time I start my computer, every time I come to Google, and you can choose what you wanna put on it. So. On my homepage, I have a little box with CNN News and a little box with BBC, and then I have weather for Atlanta. And each of those boxes I've selected to show up there, and I can position them however I want, but the content inside of them is owned by that company. So the Weather Channel decides what goes into that little box, and they update it every day. And I can't edit it, and I can't change it, and it changes automatically when they change theirs. So, it's like a small window of content, and it can be just something that you look at, or it can be something that you can click through, like the map of the obesity, you can sort of interact with it and change how it looks. And it's something that I think you're gonna see a lot more of, and has become really popular in the past 6 months or so because of Facebook and the massive number of widgets that people are creating there to try and get the adolescent group's attention. Okay, so how do we pick where we should be first and what we should be focusing on as our priority? We go where the people are. Right? And this, I love this slide, and I still have it here even though it's 2 years old, but it's even bigger now. So there are massive amounts of people using this, and we need to figure out where they are and how they're using it so we can decide where to participate. One of the things that we have created to that is a series of fact sheets on these different topics, and these are actually being uploaded this week to the CDC website at cdc.gov/healthmarketing. And so those will be available for you to access. They're not our official reports, they're just documents that we've used in planning and we think might be useful to partners. We are working internally for a demographics database, so something that we can use that's even has more depth in terms of research, that program and scientists can click through and figure out what are the demographics of the different technologies. So everybody's talking about social networks, who's using it? Or I know that I have a campaign that's roughly targeted to this group, what types of media are they using? And then we're going to be looking in the next year or so at ways that we can try and make that public to our partners. And then looking at strategies that we can use for urgent messages. So when we put out a PSA after the Virginia Tech shooting, and that was an incident that really broke in social networks, CNN was getting a lot of their information from Facebook and from MySpace during the event, so how could we better use those channels to disseminate information also? So some of the things that we are doing currently is we are building out more features on cdc.gov. The top image is the email updates. So you can subscribe at a page level to be notified when that page changes. So it can be by topic, or you can get general information like everything about emergency preparedness. And we have I think almost between 200,000 and 300,000 subscribers, and we launched that about a year and a half ago. The podcast, which I mentioned earlier, we're getting about 3,000 downloads a day. Really, really popular in topics that I wouldn't necessarily guess were popular. When we started it, we really just repurposed a lot of the content that we had that wasn't ideal for that format, but we built it, you know, and made it better over time, and people loved the idea that you could look at it in a different way, even if it was an hour-long video about hazards in the workplace or workplace violence. People really liked it. And then e-cards. So this is something I said, this is sort of why we call it interactive media, because it's not necessarily new, but it's new to us, and the idea that you can allow people to send out an electronic card that has set images, set messages, the science and communication that CDC really wants to talk about related to that topic are there, but then you can also give people the chance to add in their personalized message and then send it to a friend. And the same idea that you're much more likely to pay attention to a message that comes from someone that you care about or someone like me than you are sort of from just an authoritative source. This is what we're trying to facilitate there. We're also looking at new ways to take our content and push it out into new spaces, in particular with our partners. So this is an example. And if anyone's here from Michigan, I just pulled this today as an example. But so the idea is, let's say that the Michigan Health Department wants the SARS information here from CDC. And they don't really want to just link to it, because then you're taking someone away from their page and they have other content there that they really want them to look at. But at the same time, you don't necessarily want to be going and cutting and pasting the same content every day or going having to go back and check and see if it's been updated. So what we are looking at is something that the user wouldn't see if you came to the site, but working with our partners so that everything in that middle column there under SARS would be CDC content that's pulled from our page. So it's in the same navigation as the health department page, right? But the content is actually the same exact content on cdc.gov, and we're pushing it out. So every time we update it, it updates on the partner page, and Michigan doesn't have to go back and check and see if it's been updated or look in and see if there's new information. It's just something that we're automatically doing. We also are looking at new ways to engage people. So we recently had an activity around pandemic flu vaccinations. And the idea is that there's an interagency governmental group putting together guidance on who will get vaccinated first during a pandemic. And it was created with input from the everyday average American citizen. You can even say that anymore, but and they really wanted their input in creating it and then editing it. So what we had in conjunction with the in-person meetings was a three-day online facilitated dialogue where we recruited just over 400 participants, and they signed on. They learned about pandemic flu. We had expert panelists who were on all the time to answer questions, and then they were walked through a facilitated discussion. And then on the very last day, they were giving a poll, very specific about the guidance itself. So it might say something like, to what extent do you agree that people in critical infrastructure jobs should be vaccinated before elderly? Or to what extent do you think that at least one wage earner in every family should be vaccinated before children? And these were all suggestions that people had recommended during the discussion, and then the entire group was allowed to vote on them. So really looking at new ways to get people to participate and be more engaged, even at the policy level. I'm going to do two quick mobile campaigns. I think mobile is really, really big. A lot of the research that we have and that we're getting in shows that people have access to their cell phone across all the demographic groups. So people have cell phones, they have text messaging plans, they even sometimes have the more expensive data plans where you can send pictures and videos, and it's not connected to really education level or socioeconomic status. People have cell phones now a lot of times before they'll even have a computer in their home. So we see this as a great opportunity to connect with people. Also, it's something you have with you all the time. So we can try and interact with people at the moment that they're making an important health decision. This campaign here we did in collaboration with, of course, our partners at CDC and then with the Kaiser Family Foundation. And it's still running now. The Kaiser Family Foundation has this campaign and the mobile service that was connected with CDC's database for where HIV testing centers are in the country. And so you can take your cell phone, text in your zip code to the short code KNOWIT, and then you get back an HIV testing center in your location. So it's not perfect if you try this later. We're working on refining the database, but the idea that a lot of people who are looking for HIV information are going online and Googling HIV symptoms, which is scary for a lot of reasons. One, that there are so many people Googling HIV symptoms, but also because they may not be aware that you can be without symptoms for a number of months and years before you actually start to realize that, and so getting tested is really important. And then I was also recently at a conference for adolescents, and I heard a lot that parents are taking the advice and putting the computer in the living room as a way to watch over the interactions that are going online to try and prevent cyberbullying. But if you're a 13-year-old girl, you might not want to look up information about STDs or HIV in your living room. So really giving someone an option where they can do it in a private setting and get information. We also had a project related to HIV testing with the University of Georgia, and their new media institute there is starting a program that they're calling Personal Public Service Announcements. This event was held in Philly in November, and a team of student journalists came at the beginning of the day and listened to a presentation from CDC and the Kaiser Foundation, and then they were given a mobile phone, a backpack with equipment, and they were told, now you go out and you make a PSA for us, and you have to shoot it on your mobile phone, and you have to edit it, and you have to show it at the end of the day at the reception. And they came up with some fabulous steps. So we're doing another one actually that we'll be working on in April in Atlanta to be released during HIV testing day in June. So now I'm going to talk a little bit about the activities that we did with the seasonal influenza vaccination campaign, and this is information from the 2007-2008. And we just ended most of our activities at the beginning of January. And I have to say that this is my favorite of all the campaigns that we did today. We worked with Janine, of course, because it really shows a variety of different channels you can use to reinforce the same message. So one thing that we did is we had another button that we disseminated to our partners. This year it said Get Vaccinated, and it had the logo. It did serve as an incoming link to the CDC influenza page. However, that wasn't our primary goal. Our primary goal was to help partners promote the event and to help reinforce the messages. But we were able to track from those people who did click through what the pickup was. And we got about almost 35,000 hits while it was up. The vast majority were actually from within the CDC webpage, so other topics promoting the button, which I think was a really interesting lesson to us. So, you know, we're looking at ways that we can better cross-promote at CDC and lead people to different information on the site. I mean, it was also available in Spanish. We created a series of e-cards. There were 856 cards sent, and by far the most popular was the flu prevention for health professionals. And these are accessed from the CDC website. CDC does have a MySpace page, and so we use that as a way to promote the campaign. And similar to the button, we made a badge for MySpace. So rather than being for partners, this is for an individual. So it doesn't say get vaccinated, it says I got vaccinated. And then we made that available on the MySpace page so that anyone could cut and paste that code that's right next to the badge circled in red. And then paste it into their own MySpace page. So really empowering them to be the advocates for our message. We had a webinar for mommy bloggers hosted by Janine, and it was a great success. This was the second year that we've done a webinar for blog writers, and I think this one was by far more successful. We learned from the first round that while we had the first year some great organizations, we had APHA and some other larger groups, that really the way to reach people who are making decisions were through moms and through people who really wrote more personal blogs. These are the blogs that have more dedicated followers. So we screened and invited bloggers to participate. We had 14 blog writers who participated, and then they went back and they blogged about seasonal flu, which was also exciting because the first year we did this, they blogged more about the fact that we had this event with them than about the topic, but this year all the posts were really about flu. We had 12 total comments, 9 of them were on one blog, so we really got good interaction back and forth and people talking about it. The vast majority of them were positive. Thanks for the reminder. I've been meaning to do that. Great post. Thanks for your objective and honest remarks. And then we did get one negative, which said CDC is wonderful at using scare tactics to encourage our populace to vaccinate. I know that's shocking to everyone here that they would say that. You know, and I think that that's okay. You know, we have to expect that when you open the door, people are going to say things that aren't always great. But what I thought was really interesting is when I was talking to Janine about it, and I told her, and she said, okay, that's really good to know, but we've heard that before. That's nothing new. But it was good for us because if we had found something new, I think that would have been really valuable in that you can know if public opinion is changing in some way, it's shifting, if people are saying new things, so that you can try and address those. And then what I loved is we did have one daddy blogger, so it was mommy and daddy blogger webinar, and our daddy blogger took screenshots during the webinar and posted them on Flickr and Jaiku, which is also like a social sharing site. So we started with CDC, we reached out to bloggers, right? The bloggers wrote to their audience. We had one of the 14 people who participated, when they wrote their post, they were in the top 500 blogs at that time on the web. So they were reaching thousands of people with that post. Then we had the blog writer take screenshots and put it in Flickr, a totally different venue, and then we had additional 90 people look at those screenshots in Flickr. So with one event that we had, it really started to spread virally across the different channels.
I said viral's a bad word.
Sorry, we talk a lot about viral marketing, but I could see how that would not be the same, right? So we also are piloting mobile alerts. So this is similar to the email alerts that I talked about earlier, where you could subscribe at a page level for a topic. And we had an alert this year that went out that notified people when the new flu map went up on Fridays. So there were a lot of people that we found out were anxiously awaiting the map when it goes up, and so this was a way that they didn't have to keep checking back and seeing when it had been updated. They could get a text message wherever they were and know that it was there. We had 688 people over the course sign up for it, and we really didn't promote it at all because we're still sort of working out some bugs in the system and making sure that people understand properly how to sign up. So this was without any promotion, so I think it's going to be really big. Speaking of the flu map, we did something a little bit different this year. It's usually part of the report that comes out on Fridays. This year, in the report, and then also we lifted it out and put it on a separate page. We made it interactive. So you could, in one place, click through the different weeks and see the change over time. And people really, we had a lot of visits, and people were spending 3.4 minutes looking at the map. Now we're hoping that's because they're clicking back and forth and really looking at the data and seeing the change. It could be because they don't really understand exactly how it works, or they could be having some difficulty figuring out the application, so that's what we're going to be looking at testing in the second round. And then we created CDC's first widgets around flu, and these are up now. So There are two separate widgets. The widget on the right is a version of the flu map. So we didn't want to take the entire map and shrink it down really small and put it in the middle of a widget because that really wouldn't work too well. So instead what we did is you can look at it state by state. So you can click on Alabama and you could see this week, and then you could click back and see the previous weeks to see the change over time. And all of those clicks and all of those interactions, they happen within the widget. So for example, if this was on a state health department site, the person could see that information, click through, do all the functions without ever leaving that site. The other widget we created was the RSS reader that you see on the left. And RSS are small lines, sort of like news alerts that we can push out to people who have subscribed for them. So this is a way that it just collects the RSS feeds, which you see there under latest news. Each of those links is a new feed that's been pushed out. And it lists them in order, and it updates automatically. So if you had this on their page, instead of getting an email that said, here's the new RSS feed from, instead of it coming into an RSS reader, it can come into this. It's presented much better, and you can put this blogs or really any web page. And there are instructions on the website for how to do that. And then we also had an activity in the virtual world, Wyville. So virtual worlds are 2D or 3D places that work very much like a social network. You can make friends, you can chat with them, and you can do stuff. So Wyville is a virtual world that's based on science and education, and there are games that they can do all related to learning. In addition, there are a lot of virtual worlds out there. There are, I think, new ones that are starting to pop up every day, so you'll be hearing a lot more about it. For us, some of the reasons that we selected this is that it's extremely safe, so they have both automated and manual ways to track the chats and make sure that there isn't anything inappropriate going on. And it's one of the only virtual worlds I've seen that really have simple graphics. So you can access this on an outdated computer, on a dial-up modem. You don't need the latest equipment, and I think that really extends the reach of who we can get this information to. So the activity ran from November 1st to January 10th, and the kids could go to the city hall and get virtually vaccinated for seasonal flu. And when they did, they got a little button, and then they were protected from the flu. Now, that flu actually did break out in Wyville, and when you got the flu, that meant that you got little red spots on the face of your avatar, and when you were chatting, some of your words were replaced with a chew. And it lasted for 5 days, and everyone got better. No fatalities. So we learned from last year, we did a similar, smaller version of this activity, that the kids thought, yeah, that's really cool and that's really fun, but we have some questions about it. Right? The kids, you started asking things like, well, are two vaccinations better than one? And they'd had the flu and Wyville before, they'd done some research on how that affects, kids' understanding of vaccinations, and then showed that they actually went back and talked about their families, about vaccinations. And so they said, well, first there was that flu, now there's this flu. Like, do I have to get vaccinated every year? And we thought, okay, what they really want is meaningful information. And my favorite was the little girl who said, okay, can you, explain this to me, because I work in the newbie center where all the new Wyvillians come when they first come in world, and I want to be able to tell them why this is important. Right, so tell me about flu shots so I can go tell all my friends that this is an important thing. So this year we had a slightly larger activity. There were just under 41,000 unique Wyvillians who got vaccinated. So those are each individual children who participated. And there were over 1,800 grandparents. So it turns out that even though Wyville was created for kids, there are lots of grandparents that have time in the afternoon to get online and hang out with their grandchildren. And so this year, when they got vaccinated, they could send them an invitation to participate in the activity, and then the grandparents could sign in and get vaccinated too. We also had an in-world party, which was very exciting. If the person in the little CDC hat looks familiar, that's because it's Janine. She'll be signing autographs later in the hallway. And she signed on for an hour and talked to the kids. And it was amazing. I was so impressed. They had so many health questions. And they asked some really sophisticated questions. So how come some people get the flu even though they are vaccinated? sometimes don't vaccinations cause you to get sick? Can we get more information about vaccinations elsewhere after this? I love this one. This is, you know, the average age is 8 to 11, 8 to 13, and they went, this isn't even enough information. Where can I go to find out more about seasonal flu? And how can you prevent it? Then, of course, because they're kids, they ask some fantastic questions as well, like, is farting healthy? And at what temperature could you freeze? And my favorite, do you have any tips on faking sick? Why didn't I ask someone? That's genius.
My favorite was the one about butt cancer.
Yes, yeah. I didn't put that on the slide, but they did ask, can you get cancer in your butt?
No, they asked everything from smoking cessation, but they also asked about childhood vaccinations, HPV. They had real interest.
Absolutely.
And they had a lot of health questions.
A lot. And they were so excited that a real health professional would take the time to talk to them. Just a couple last items for our seasonal flu. We took some photos and we uploaded them in Flickr. So CDC has a channel in Flickr, and we're going to be uploading more of our photos there. I have the URL on the last page. But this is a way to take things that we already have, that we post in our public health image library, which amazingly is not as popular as Flickr, and extend the reach.
And they can use these.
Yeah, and you can absolutely use these pictures.
You could use that vaccination picture if you're doing a flyer or a poster or a campaign. You could have that.
And we think, absolutely. And we think this year that most of the pictures were actually used by public health professionals in flyers or in posters. The first year we uploaded more, microscopic pictures that I thought were kind of cooler, but nobody else agreed. But this year, these I think were really, really useful, and I think it's public health professionals that were using this. And we also have a space in Second Life, which is another virtual world, and so we did put up some information there as well. So just in closing, CDC is really committed to using interactive media as a communication channel because we have the research to show that people are using it, and the research to show that people are taking that information and making health decisions with it and sharing it with other people and empowering each other to do things. So it increases the dissemination. Each of the channels I talked about have really unique characteristics that I think can be of great advantage when you're talking about certain messages or reaching certain groups. We can reach a really diverse group, especially now with the research on cell phones and what a huge population we can reach there. And then it really is this interactive communication that I think is at the heart of Web 2.0 and new media. So thank you very much. Here are the URLs, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Now we can let Aaron sit down for a minute while people, I know this is new, and thank you, that was excellent and clarified a lot, and it looks like we already have a question.
Get you before you even finish drinking. My name is Michelle Roberts, and I work at the Washington State Department of Health, and I think this is fantastic, and I'm so glad CDC is stepping out and leading the way, and I'm really doing a lot of advocating to try some of this stuff in my state health department and meeting a lot of resistance. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is around we can't control the content. Mm-hmm. And so I'm wondering if you have any advice on how you work through that in CDC or ideas about how we can continue.
We can just move this
okay.
over.
Yeah, that's a great question. So the first thing that we did, because we meet a lot of that at different groups of the CDC as well. And I think the best thing you can do is to start with the research. So there's tons of great data out there, and we've tried to compile some of it on the fact sheets that I talked about. Pew is an excellent source. Jupiter Research, Forrester, although I'd say Pew was probably where I would start, and it's all free. And to show people that, okay, this isn't going away. This isn't a fad. This is the evolving nature of the web, and if we don't participate now, it's going to be much, much harder to catch up later. The other thing is that if you were to plot out all the different types of channels and things that you could do, they're on a sliding scale of control. So you could start with the ones that give you the most control. So podcasts, or videos on YouTube, even though you know, I'm not convinced that's an excellent way to do it because it takes a lot of marketing to actually get people to find it. But looking at new channels that you could disseminate information that doesn't give anyone the ability to change it or edit it. So you have, that's on one side. Then in the middle, you move towards e-cards where you have a set message and people can add to it and personalize it. Then next are blogs because it's more interactive and people can leave comments. And then at the very end are virtual worlds, and you really don't have any control over what people are going to do or say there. So those are some of the things that I would suggest. And like for blogs, that's why we work with the blog writers. I think the success in the webinar was that we gave the blog writers communication strategies. Here's the science behind it. And by the way, you know, Janine explained, this is the how we talk about it. From our focus groups, this is what we found to be effective, and let them carry the message. We did not go back and participate in any of the blogs. Once they posted that and there were comments back and forth, that wasn't something that we were engaged in, so it was a little bit more removed.
I wanted to mention that I know a lot of people work on childhood immunizations, that CDC will be doing some of these exploring some of these media for childhood stuff. So the badge and the buttons, you'll be able to download something for your site that came from us free, all the same kinds of things she was talking about for flu. We're going to have similar things for childhood.
I guess that was my question. I was going to say it was great, really. We've been trying to do some more with mommy bloggers too, and we've been hosting some conference calls, but I think that maybe we should do the webinar because you can get more information out to them in document form. We've been doing mostly vaccine safety things with Paul Offit, and they are really interested in it, and I was wondering if you could tell us what other priorities you're planning next, what other immunization-focused ones are, and if there's any way that the immunization world could help advocate that CDC do more, because I know there's lots of priorities at CDC. So who do we write to?
So childhood was definitely...
Well, not just childhood, but even the adolescent. What are your next plans? Do you have a list?
I think that's coming.
You know, we don't have a set list of what the priorities are in terms of the campaigns over the next year. I can tell you right now we're working on childhood immunizations, meningitis specifically for Arizona, and injury prevention. But we're really open to looking for new opportunities, and, you know, I think that some of our best work in terms of really piloting these in the communities is going to come through partners. And so I would say maybe if you're interested in trying some of this, that Janine would be a great person to talk to about that.
Yeah, I mean, if there are strong, you know, if you have strong interest in one of these things and would like to see it, that's what we need to hear. Mm-hmm. Childhood was another match, but I think there are some venues like the Y-ville is a nice match for adolescent issues since it's them, you know, mm-hmm. on there. So we'd probably explore something like that.
How did you recruit for the Mommy Bloggers webinar or get people to participate in that?
Well, the first thing we did is we screened the bloggers. And so we used two sites, Technorati and Ice Rocket. And between these two, you can get a good judge of who's talking about the subject and then sort of how credible they are in the blogosphere, which is rated by how many other people link back to them as a source. So if someone puts up a blog post and 100 people link back to them and cite them, that's an indication that the blogosphere sees them as credible. And then we did manual screens of the blogs. And really what we were looking for was just anyone who was objective. If there was a set agenda going into it, we really didn't want to address those issues in this event. We really wanted to keep it on topic. And then we reached out by email. And it is tough to get them to participate. I think the thing about blogging is you can do it anytime. And so these are moms. They're busy during the day. So we probably invited about 15 and got 14 who participated. And then I think there were 9 people who commented. I mean, who wrote posts.
Very enjoyable. Two quick questions for you. One was on the for the text messaging. Did you use specific software for that, or did you contract outside of CDC to do that?
The text messaging is actually the software is at the Kaiser Family Foundation. We, I, I have more information I can point you to if you're specifically interested in mobile, because we just co-sponsored a conference at Stanford on texting for health, and it's a really tough challenge. You can do SMS, which is just, you know, the text-based, pretty easily, but when you start to go beyond that into pictures or different applications, it becomes really difficult because all the carriers are different, all the phones are built differently, you need to build different applications, so that's tough. But we also show that people are using text messaging far more than any of the other features, so we think that's a good place to start.
Any other questions about the CSS script? Will you have the scripting?
Yeah, we have a technical team, so I will try my best to answer it. If not, I can take your card. Yeah.
Well, this is a simple side.
Okay.
Is there a box on your site that allows you to choose what's included in that? So, like, to, you know, if we'd like to put information for childhood vaccines, we would want to limit that to just childhood vaccines on that particular section. Mm-hmm. If there's one for adolescents, the CSS scroll, you know, that has the news just regarding adolescents. So in those different sections, when they update automatically, I was just wondering if it was like a la carte that you could choose for this section, what it was going to be, the next section, what it was going to be inserted.
Yes, it is. You can definitely choose by section. However, we're just beginning to build it out, so there aren't a lot of selections right now. But it is very specific to the topic.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Tom from the registry in Los Angeles.
Hi.
And I was very interested in this because some of the things we're starting to look at is parent outreach, just because LA is so diverse and we also have Orange County to worry about. What do you think would be some of the challenges with, let's say, the regional marketing? Because, like, since CDC could cover, like, you know, a wider sphere, like, how could we, like, possibly target, like, just the LA and Orange area and, you know, getting the registry, you know, out there for parents?
Mm-hmm. I think that's a really good question. You know, we sometimes even have the opposite challenge in that we have a broad website, but not everyone's going to come there for it. And so we really rely on partners at the local level to help us disseminate it. So I would look for other organizations in the area, and in particular, universities who are really beginning to branch out into the new media space. And then I know CDC, we've started to evolve our idea of just partners. And so there are a lot of companies and corporations that are really interested in health, either for employee wellness or just because it's something that's becoming really sort of entrenched in society now, is this idea of like health and wellness and green and organic. And so maybe looking at having new partners that you might not have thought of before because you don't necessarily align in organizations, and then also in the tech field.
Do parents visit school websites, local schools, to find out calendars and things?
Hi, my name is Connie Smith. I'm with the Georgia Division of Public Health, and this presentation was off the chain. Outstanding. I'm in marketing. This was off.
No one has ever said that to me, and I think that's awesome. Thank you.
I will say this to you, though. Is there a possibility of us being able to get this presentation?
Sure.
I did my best to take as many notes, but you're far above the curve than any organization. And we look to CDC as our guidance for this type of information. I was particularly interested in the content syndication that you mentioned. Elaborate more, because one of my challenges when I get back to the office on Monday is making the Georgia Division of Public Health's website more engaging, not just for employees, but also for individuals throughout the state of Georgia. So the content syndication that you elaborated on was very important, and I know that's something that we can do immediately. And we will be trying to use CDC's resources that you've already invested in to make our product even better.
Great. Thank you. Yeah. So we actually, the other part of our division works on CDC.gov, and they have been working for almost 2 years now on research on the website and building out the new homepage and some of the other features that are going to be coming soon. So a lot of what you see on the website is based on research on who comes there. And for us, the top three audiences are public health professionals is number one, healthcare providers is two, and then the general consumer is three. So knowing that and having that data really helped us make the case to revise a lot of the content to be more consumer friendly. We also looked at ways that we could have fresh content on the page to keep people coming back. And that this is where I think the widgets are going to be really useful, not just from CDC, but other partners who may be developing them. So selecting things that you think would be relevant and useful, but you don't have to do the work in terms of maintaining them and updating them. And then the content syndication, I think, is going to feed into making it look fresh. And we are really looking at, that'll be something that's more behind the scenes, so the user might not necessarily see that, but trying to create as many tools as possible so that our partners can use the information that's there on the CDC website, which is not always easy to find. I will admit that, and use that on their site. So we're building out the pilots for that too, and I think we're working on some immunization pilots for that. So Janine would be a good person to talk to for that as well. But for us, looking at ways that we can take what we have and extend the reach, and it doesn't really matter to us if it says, you know, CDC at the top. It matters most that it's credible, that it's scientific, and that it's getting out to the people where they need them, and, you know, helping our partners in facilitating that.